You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simpler Living Works. This is episode 115 of Simple Living Works with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we feature Lee's conversation with Grace Jerry on moving from religious imperialism to liberation for all. Greetings, Lee, from Paso Robles, California, and Simple Living Works.
And I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. Well, I'm going to put a question to our listeners today about my conversation with today's guest. I find this a really complex but very relevant subject, and that is how really not just Christian missions, but that's the one I'm most familiar with, how religious outreach and missionary endeavors have proceeded so very often along with the impetus of nations to be colonialist and imperialist, and then how many missionaries began to change out of that into a more liberationist point of view, really recognizing that their work is to seek justice for all, and that means they started giving up the notion that you had to be Christian or the rest of the religions of the world really, because the rest of the religions of the world really were inferior. So lots of people have moved on this along the way, and that's really what the story is about today. So listeners, think about this. You know, whether you're Catholic, evangelical, Pentecostal, or some, or you don't identify as Christian at all, but maybe identify with some other faith. When have you experienced the imperialistic, colonialist attitude, the superior supremacy kinds of attitudes of religious faith? But also, please recognize, and here's an important thing for us, that lots of people functioning in the name of religions are very aware that that's not the way to go, and that the way to go really is to see that all people and all species are to be treated with the greatest of respect and to seek the liberation for all. So, you know, this is all very relevant because, like right now, there's an evangelical pastor in Turkey being held. I don't know. Perhaps you as listeners know. You know, is it because he's so liberationist and revolutionary minded, or is it because he is so imperialistic and colonial and that he's offended many of the Muslim people? I mean, I don't know his story, but many missionaries get into this kind of situation because of the attitudes and that have been present in both missionaries and in governments. So that's the background today. So listeners, what has been your experience about missionaries and about global missions and about religious imperialism and religious liberationism? So that's how we're going to go forward, Jerry, into today's interview with Grace Jerry, whom I got to know in the 1990s, as I was beginning myself to change out of to do this journey that I just talked about, whether I was going to be an imperialistic minded or liberationist minded. I got to know Grace in the 1990s, and she and her husband were early co-founders of Jubilee Economics Ministries, and so it's a real treat to interview her and present her life story, born as she was in China with an imperialistic missionary mindset of her parents and grandparents. And they're, you know, I mean, they're not bad people. They were incredibly adventuresome and incredibly oriented toward the service of humanity. But they were also very unconscious about the larger picture geopolitically that was going on. So that's how I think we can proceed now into the interview or the conversation with Grace Jerry. I'm speaking today with Grace Jerry, longtime friend who was in the early days of Jubilee Economics. She and her husband Tom were part of the founding core of this organization and ministry in 1999 and 2000. And so welcome, Grace, to the Common Good Podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here.
What we're going to talk about today is not the origins of Jubilee Economics Ministries, but something of Grace's life story, because she embodies something that I think we need to recognize happens to people. Here's what it is in a nutshell. Wes Howardbrook has written a book with the title Empire Baptized, but then it's a subtitle that's very special, How the Church Embraced What Jesus Rejected. Grace was born in China. Her parents went there as part of the China Inland Mission. And I don't know at what point, Grace, you began to realize what that all means, but as I think about that at this stage in life, not in my earlier stage in life, because at earlier stage in life, I just thought that the church's missionary movement was all about truly bringing the gospel around the world. And in a sense, that was its very sacred intent. On the other hand, what happened and the way the package it went in was very imperialistic, very much a part of the whole colonial movement. So that's kind of the thing I want to talk about today, because that's where Grace started, and today she's a liberationist. And how in the world do you get there? So Grace, start us in China and just tell us about that experience, and we can just kind of see how this conversation unfolds.
Well, I was, as Lee said, I was born in China, and I would like to really give credit to my grandmother on my father's side, because she was a courageous woman who felt the call to be a missionary in the traditional sense of saving souls and winning the unsaved to Christ, right? Anyway, she left Australia, her home, in the middle to late 1800s, all by herself as a single woman, and shipped out to China to follow that call. Now, she was a very strong woman and became rather domineering, actually. But anyway, it wasn't until I was an adult, not too many years ago, actually, that I recognized what a brave woman she was. And then my mother followed in her same track, leaving a farm in Ludington, Michigan, and also feeling a call to be a missionary in China. And so she left and made her way to China as a single woman at about probably a similar age, in her early 20s. And both of them met their future husbands in the same town in Kunming, Yunnan, China. Because my father was born there, and then subsequently, of course, I was born there with my sister. When did I begin to change an attitude that God's will is supreme? I still believe that, but all's well that ends well, and so forth, because I had a rather traumatic time. My parents sent me off to school by myself when I was age 5 across China. We were in southwest China, and they sent me up to a school in northeast China, a British school, because the mission, the China mission, was a British institution. Anyway, and that was just before World War II began. It was so in August, before Pearl Harbor, we left China, and they almost left me behind because I didn't have a visa for the U.S. Because I was a British citizen from my father's side. Anyway, we did get off and left.
Now, how old were you, Grace, just to interrupt, how old were you when that very chaotic departure from China was happening?
I was 7 years old. So I had been in that school for just 18 months, actually.
So from the age of 5 to the age of 7, you essentially were not with parents. You were with surrogates in an educational environment. And then a kind of uncertain time, a deeply uncertain time, not kind of, get rid of that word, a deeply uncertain and chaotic time as you left the country. When were you reconnected with your parents?
Well, they're they picked me up in Chifu, where the school was, and in the end, I did leave with them, even though they had been willing to leave me behind. And the traumatic piece of this is that there was only one more ship that left China with expatriates, as we were, for the U.S. after we left, before Pearl Harbor. But I had several cousins, and my future stepmother were all interned in a Japanese concentration camp very shortly after I left.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is really an amazing, amazing experience. And I know that the way that people of faith at that time would have talked about it would be to say that this is the deep sacrifices we have to make to serve God and carry out this call to share the gospel with the world. How old were you before you started looking at that all with a kind of a different narrative than what your parents and grandparents would have told it?
Oh, that had to have been well into my adulthood, probably after Tom, my husband, and I went to Guatemala as missionaries, which is amazing that I would even consider being a missionary, because I have not considered ever going back to China because that's of the trauma and negative feelings around that. Prior to our leaving for Guatemala, where we ended up with the Presbyterian Church, we had an amazing 6 months of orientation in Stony Point, New York, in which we were exposed to very different ways of looking at how expatriates and Christians representing churches can and should present themselves in a foreign country.
Aha. So there was a different kind of, would you call it kind of cultural sensitivity that you were being given, a kind of a cultural consciousness and a different way of contextualizing faith? Is that a way to say it? How would you say it in those special months at Stony Point?
Well, yes, that is a good way to say it. my personal learnings at that time were tempered by childcare, because we had our third child was born while we were there in Stony Point. But, I guess I'm a bit of rebel at heart. And so Tom was the one that was officially paid to be a missionary, if you will, with the Presbyterian Church. So almost right from the get-go, I've sort of shaped my own role in Guatemala, not adhering necessarily to what the local church, Presbyterian Church of Guatemala, which is very, very conservative and still is to this day. And actually, they didn't even quite know what to do with us. But I happened to be a nurse, and so that sort of was easy for them to deal with. The Guatemalan Church had just, actually the Presbyterian Mission had just sold the hospital that they had run for years. And I'll quick to add that the Guatemalan Church, when we arrived, was already 100 years old. So therefore, they were not in need of pastors or evangelists, even, if you will. So we were molded in a very different perspective of responding to what the needs in the country were and how they defined what they wanted these missionaries to do.
Okay, I'm going to jump out of that story a little bit, I think, because the first time I saw you, Grace, you were standing at the podium, having been called there by the leading officer of the Chicago, the Chicago Christian Leadership for Latin America, or Religious Leadership for Latin America? Chicago Religious Leadership for Latin America. And this organization was really doing, I think still exists and still continues to look at Latin America from a religious perspective, but also from a perspective of radical justice. And so there was this woman called to the platform who was being given an award. And that moment stuck in my mind because I was relatively new to the Chicago area, having left Lincoln, Nebraska. And I was looking for people who were really oriented toward justice. What was that award about? What was I actually observing there? I know you shake your head about this often, but anyway, that's where I started first to be aware of you.
Well, that's almost embarrassing, right? We returned from Guatemala in 1979 after having been there for 15 years, and I chose work here in the States to work for human rights and justice because I had seen firsthand the role of our country, the United States, as it was trying to shape the destinies of Central America. And it was at the time of the Contra War in Nicaragua, and it was very clear to me that this was way out of line of justice or whatever. Anyway, so I was working with an organization called Witness for Peace, and what we did was taking delegations of U.S. people to Central America, and we were particularly focused on Nicaragua at that point, to bring back the stories of what was really happening there to the U.S. And so I also had taken other delegations with other groups, but primarily to give a voice to the voiceless, if you will, about what was happening there, and which obviously contradicted what the general news stories were telling.
Okay, so at that point, Witness for Peace had been your primary vehicle, and why were you being given an award? Because you were doing that?
I'm not really sure because I don't think they ever gave that word again. So anyhow, sort of the history of what I'd been come through and so forth, but mostly work in Central America.
Yeah. So it isn't so much about achievement, which isn't anything that you aspire to, particularly in the sense of awards, but nonetheless, something important is happening here, I think, and that is that you were among many other U.S. missionaries in Central America in every denomination, including certainly the Roman Catholic priests, who were coming under a deep awareness that colonialism by any major government, including the United States, to dominate that region was wrong, and that it was not serving the people, that it continually was in the, working with the oppressors rather than the oppressed, as I understand it. And I don't know, you want to say a word?
We'll return momentarily to Lee's conversation with Grace Jerry. Starting with this podcast, we're adding a new feature to most episodes. After we've heard from our guests, we'll give a common good feature. In just 3 to 5 minutes, we'll highlight the work of some person or organization that is clearly pursuing the common good over personal privilege, advantage, or gain. Today, we'll feature how a professor teaches a lesson on the common good. Be sure to listen following each guest. And yes, tell us what you think of this new idea, the common good feature. Now let's return to our conversation with Grace Jerry.
What was a turning point or two for you? Do you remember? Was it just so gradual you not even sure how it happened?
No, I think it was actually from living in Guatemala and becoming acquainted with people like Julia Esquivel, who is she was a renowned poet and dissident in Guatemala, and we became good friends, and as a matter of fact, she's still alive, and I visited her just last year. Anyway, people like her helped me to see that my Christian faith really does have an implication for working against injustice. And you see that those kinds of thinking was not very prevalent even among Presbyterian missionaries in Guatemala at that time. Mm-hmm. So we were a bit suspect, Tom and I were, along with other missionaries that had arrived at the same time that we did. So I think that was a real turning point for me as I learned from them and others, from her and others, about how I believe the scriptures and my faith really do speak very strongly and clearly against the kinds of policies that our country was promoting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so much of this continues, of course, to be relevant in living in this country with our eyes being opened in Latin America, and I know Witness for Peace, and as you led those delegations, opened the eyes of many people, as it says in the scriptures, opening the eyes of the blind to see things we just weren't able to see. Right now we're having this conversation in the throes of children being literally taken out of the arms of their parents at the border. And people sometimes justifying that on the basis of religious faith. And you had come to see, as I pray more people are coming to see in our country today, that this is an incredible, incredible injustice. It's just heinous, and it's something that we need to stand against as human beings and certainly if people of faith are there. So how would you describe yourself today? You know, I mean, you certainly could not be bear witness to your faith in the way that your parents did. That would be impossible. How would you describe? Because it's hard. I mean, you've been on an incredible journey over your 80 plus years. I'll just divulge your age, and it's one of the reasons why I wanted to have this conversation with you, because you represent someone who has had this incredible journey from a very colonial, imperial kinds of way to bear our faith to a very different understanding, but still deeply prophetic and more so, I would say, deeply prophetic and committed to justice. So who is Grace Jerry, woman of faith today? That'll put it to you.
Well, I'm definitely still on this journey, still learning every day. And I think this whole attitude that seems to be so prevalent here in our country and among Christians so deeply embedded is this whole idea of obeying the law. And if you disobey the law, then you deserve any kind of treatment, like separation from your parents if you're a child at the border because they are illegally, quote-unquote, entering this country. Well, obviously, we've been in a country of immigrants. I myself am an immigrant in a way because I was a British subject when I came here. Actually, I was denied entry into this country because of that way back then. Anyway, it's just unconscionable that the leadership of our country and that the people, so many so-called Christians today will endorse these kinds of policies, which are just absolutely, well, what should I say, contradictory to what I understand the gospel of Jesus Christ to be all about.
Okay, so you continue to be part of a Christian church, and what do you seek when you seek a Christian church, given your orientation toward this, and knowing that many churches do not have the cutting edge of justice and prophetic insight that you've come to have in your life? What do you seek in a church that identifies as a Christian congregation?
Well, I have been enormously, enormously blessed to have been intimately involved with two different congregations, one in Chicago and now another one in Indianapolis. The first one was Presbyterian, and where the whole, all of these issues of gay and lesbian rights, for example, became central because that church was located in the heart of the gay and lesbian community of Chicago. And their openness to not only deal with local issues like that, but we were able to encourage people to go to the Middle East and live and work in Palestine and then bring back their messages of the injustices going on there, as well as now the issues around the environment and how all of this ties together with how we're destroying our planet, the one earth that we live in. Now, the church that I'm attending now in Indianapolis is a Disciples of Christ church, and the pastor there is a woman that I met in Guatemala and in 1990-91, when both of us were involved with accompanying refugees returning from Mexico back to Guatemala and reestablishing their life in back home. Anyway, when I knew that Linda was pastoring a church in Indianapolis, and Tom and I had been visiting a whole lot of other churches, and nothing felt right. But so I told Tom, I said, "Well, let's go find Linda." Well, the rest is history. We've become very involved in that church now. I have, and they too are very committed to social justice, and human rights and environmental issues and so forth. So I really feel very much at home there. However, I do struggle with how parochial so many North Americans are, but then that's just because they haven't had the kinds of experiences that I've had of visiting other countries and not just to be a tourist, right? But to really look what's going on in those countries and know something, learn something about the history, and learn from the people that are there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now you've referred to Tom several times, and Tom died a couple of years ago now, not quite. It was around in December, and I can say that Tom was a board member of Jubilee Economics Ministries at one time, and you and Tom were so integral in our early core group in Chicago when this ministry started after we had read the book, The Biblical Jubilee and the Struggle for Life, and we wanted very much to to see the biblical jubilee, so long silent in congregations and everywhere, be brought to life, which I still continue to work on. And it hasn't exactly been a powerful tornado that has swept through the land or anything, but nonetheless, it actually is growing some, and especially in Mexico, where we have a couple of circles. We're going to complete our conversation here, but I would love to have you say something about, why you and Tom have been involved in Jubilee Economics Ministries over the years. And Grace and my spouse Juanita led the first two delegations, I think, that we took to Mexico, and there were, oh my goodness, the list goes on. But I know I have a deep appreciation for the Jerrys and their role in Jubilee, and I'd just like to have you say something about how you see all that at this point.
Well, as many of you know, the GEM, or Jubilee Economics Ministers, began or was inspired by this book that Lee referred to. And the book was written by very close friends of ours, Ross and Gloria Kinsler, and who served in Guatemala at the same time that we did. So we have been immersed in the whole idea and concept of Jubilee, and then to see it take root and to flourish here in this country and now in Mexico has been a real joy and fulfillment of lots of dreams, I think. And whether you refer to your faith or your commitment to justice in this exactly the same terms as we have been using with Jubilee, I think that GEM has continued to bring explain even more profoundly the biblical call to justice. And especially now in terms of the sustainability or unsustainability of our lifestyle in this country, especially in this country, at being living on only the only earth that God has given us, and we're acting as if we own the world and can do what we jolly well please. But I think we have to be called to task and called to responsibility in response to the reality of the climate change issues.
Okay, thank you, Grace. And we've really been listening to a story of how a prophetic voice gets shaped over a lifetime. We've been listening to a story of referring back to the subtitle of the book I mentioned at the start, of how Grace has sought to extract herself from an empire, not to baptize it, but to recognize that we are to live in resistance to this kind of supersized superpower domination of the world, and that unfortunately many churches have embraced it, even though Jesus resisted it. And to the degree, Grace, that you and I are successful, I seek the solidarity of people like you to be one of the resistors and seeking to follow Jesus in that sense amid what is obviously one of the world's superpowers. Thank you for being on the Common Good podcast.
Thank you, Lee. It's been, obviously, I feel that the privilege is mine to have had my faith and understanding of this world deepened by people like Lee.
You've been listening to the second half of Lee's conversation with Grace Jerry on moving from imperialism to liberation.
Well, let's see today, Jerry, how we can initiate this common good feature. And I want to do this by calling attention of our listeners to the June 2018 edition of National Geographic, where there's an article entitled Greed versus the Common Good. If everyone's success depended on it, would you share or be selfish? When tested on that question, many failed. That's the subheading of this article by Delon Selterman. So let me just read a couple paragraphs. He says, I teach undergraduate psychology courses at the University of Maryland, and my classes draw students with diverse interests. But every one of them perks up when I pose this question. Do you want 2 extra credit points on your term paper, or 6 points? I tell my students that the extra credit offer is part of an exercise illustrating the interconnectedness of choices individuals make in communities. I explain that the exercise was inspired by an ecologist named Garrett Hardin and an address that he delivered 50 years ago this summer, describing what he called the tragedy of the commons. Hardin said that when many individuals act in their own self-interest without regard for society, the effects can be catastrophic. Hardin used the 19th century convention of the commons, a cattle grazing pasture that villagers shared, to warn against the overexploitation of communal resources. Now, what this professor does is tells his students, you know, you can get 2 points or 6 points, but then there's a catch. He says, I stipulate that if more than 10% of the class members choose 6 points, no one gets any points. The extra credit points are analogous to water, fuel, grazing pasture from Hardin's analysis or in any natural resource. So according to some free market economic theories, if everyone strives for maximum personal benefit, then societies will thrive. And by this logic, the student's rational choice would be to pick 6 points, just as the shepherd's rational choice would be to use as much grazing pasture as possible. And those who maximize personal consumption aren't greedy, they're just being strategic. Ah, but when everyone chooses this path, the common resource is overtaxed and societies end up with overharvesting, water shortages, climate change. Well, what happened in his classes is that most of the time, no one got any extra credit because more than 10% of the students chose 6 points. Well, then in 2016, he started adding a dimension that you could choose 2 points if you were one of his students, 6 points, or 0 points. If you chose 0 points, then that means that someone who had chosen 6 points would be randomly eliminated from getting any points. Well, this extra dimension of interdependence meant that far more students started choosing 2 extra points of credit, and therefore they started sharing more for the common good of all. Well, read the article for yourself, but it's an excellent way that this professor has chosen to teach interdependence and the common good, and it really undercuts this notion that everyone benefits the most if we just maximize profit. So that's the common good feature for today, Jerry.
Excellent. And I assume that we will put a link to that article in the show notes for today's episode.
We will.
What's coming up?
All right. So the next episode, we're going to hear from Jay Moses. Jay Moses is a pastor actually in the church that I pastored for 10 years. But here's why we're going to interview him. He has done something remarkable in this West Suburban Church, Western Suburbs of Chicago, by making it a basis for interfaith activity, not just ecumenical activity, but six Muslims, African-Americans, Native Americans. Anyway, we'll talk about it next time. But to do this in a local congregation is truly a remarkable thing to carry off. He's not the only one to do it, but he certainly brings a lot of uniqueness to this. And so we'll be eager to share another example of how one faith in its worship center can choose to become interfaith. By the way, have you listened to our recent episodes? Because in mid-July and early August, we hosted John Deere on peace and nonviolence. By all means, listen, because you're sure to pick up thoughts that you'll value. I know that as we make these episodes, we certainly learn.
Indeed. Also, please subscribe to my Simpler Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of Lee's blogs, the Common Good podcast, Simple Living Works podcast, and other intriguing happenings and events, such as non-conform freely celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage and holidays without consumerism. Please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Common Good podcast and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Time to wrap up this episode. If you're a regular listener, you've heard our closing comments, so we'll say goodbye now. But if you're a newer listener, here's what we'd like you to know. Please subscribe to our Jubilee Economics, One Earth, and Simple Living Works blogs. We post new nearly every week, so if you're a subscriber, you'll be told when we post something new. Subscriptions are free. Subscribe to our blogs through our websites. You can also subscribe to the Common Good podcast and Simple Living Works podcasts at iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of the Common Good podcast and Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.
Simply live, learn to live simply so others can live.